1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
How the hell are you, Higher Side Chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and just trying to enjoy my place in this round of recorded history. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and I hope you saved room for dessert, because today is a real treat. And let me tell you why. We all know manipulation runs deep, from the coding of language and the altering of natural cycles, to the rewriting of history, the cloaking of the esoteric, the rigging of the global economy, and the royal tinkering of everything in between. Sadly, nearly every aspect of reality has had the puppet strings securely fastened onto it before your feet first touch the ground. But be that as it may, all hope is not lost, because there are those who have dedicated their short manifestations to moving the needle back in the direction of the people by exposing corruption, the occult, and the agenda of the power pyramid, and I'm honored to have such a great example of that noble cause with me here today. His name is Clyde Lewis, and surely you know him as the host of Ground Zero, really one of the last remaining shows on terrestrial radio that I think is worth anybody's time. One of my favorite spotlight shiners, string pullers, and rabbit hole tumblers, not to mention a personal inspiration and one hell of a host. Clyde Lewis, my man, welcome to THC.
Welcome. Thank you. I mean, that was a great welcome. I was going to say, I just have never had something so vociferous in my life. There's a word for you, vociferous. You can write it down and learn it every day and use it in your words. That's so cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it, man. Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
You bet. That's good to be here.
Yeah, man. I like to think that I'm good at what I do because I've been able to cater my process and format to play to my strengths and mask my weaknesses. But to go on the radio for 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, live for decades, I can't hold a candle to that, man. That's something special.
Actually, I do 5 hours, which really, I may be taking that back, though. I may be back to 3 hours again. I used to do, 3 hour shows. I'd do, two news shows, and then I'd have to do some TV. And, my gosh, I was just really working hard through these years, and then took not really a break. I was doing tour shows where I was, going from bar to bar. And I actually did Masonic temples, too. I went in and I spoke amongst the Masons. A lot of people said, why'd you do that? I said, I wanted to go to the belly of the beast and kind of shake the tree, and then one day I said something bad about Ben Franklin that kicked my butt out of there. So I learned my lesson well.
Yeah, man. I mean, I like that approach, and I think those live shows are pretty interesting. You're one of the few who's really kind of a pioneer of that in the conspiracy world. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things I think we did in the conspiracy world that we pioneered. I mean, we were the first show to be actually streamed online. We were the first online downloadable news show. In fact, when we were streaming online, it was back in the early 1990s.
Damn.
And one of the first people we streamed was Art Bell. And Art was very surprised that his show was being streamed. He didn't understand what that meant because it was early on in the time of radio. We got a phone call, I think it was from Japan or someplace, and he was shocked. He said, yeah, we're listening to Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero and Paranet Continuum. And then from there, we listened to Dreamland, and Art was all surprised, and now Art's making a comeback.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But in the meantime, we've been around as long as Art has. It's just that I didn't really go national until about the year 2000 went national, and then of course Ground Zero happened for real, and they told me I shouldn't use my name, and I told them I would, and then that was a struggle because they kept me local for a while. Now I'm back being national again, which is nice.
Yeah. Right on, man. Yeah, it's a crazy road. I know a couple of the bullet points to your background. Raised Mormon in Utah, left the church, started Ground Zero in 95, I believe. And
yeah,
just outside of having an interest in the paranormal and a passion for calling out the elite, I've heard you talk about several paranormal experiences and strange sightings that you've had personally along the way. Can you tell us about a couple of the things you've witnessed that have left the biggest impression on you?
Things that left the biggest impression on me. East SETI out here in Washington State left a big impression on me. You see UFOs there all the time. Mm. Did an investigation of the Maury Island case. A lot of people said it was a hoax, but I think I've opened up the door to have people actually reacquaint themselves with that case because it was one of those cases, the first cases before Roswell, that was really intriguing that I wanted to uncover, and I managed to find information and things just landed in front of me, and I was so excited about it. But the thing is that the research now is kind of splintered off. There have been people who have written books about it, a couple people anyway. And of course, there's a new movie that was produced that I saw, 2 years ago, it's really well done. And I'm hoping to turn out my own documentary eventually, if I can get my video people to work on it. But in the meantime, I just have to find the right people to want to, you know, do the deed and get it done right. And then once that's done, I mean, I just think that there are a lot of stories that have been lost because there's so many people out there that were pioneers to what was going on. And, you know, one instrumental guy, as I said before, the instrumental go-to guy had always been Art Bell. And then, of course, when Art left, we had George Norrie take over Coast to Coast. And Coast to Coast was like the end-all, be-all for all shows. And what's funny is that I was doing my thing and people were doing their thing. And now with all the internet shows out there, there's a lot of people doing the research. And I've always said that, you know, I'm more than happy to do the internet shows and say hello to the internet broadcasters, as well as having some of them on my program, because I think that it's almost like this unseen network of people who have these ideas, unseen network of people who have these shows.
Yeah.
And many of them do their research. And I remember Jimmy Church happened to land some research that I was reading about, and rather than just going on the air and reporting it, I called him and I said, hey, I said, I know that you've been doing the internet, now you're working on Art Bell's network. I says, you need to come on my show. And he says, well, people think that we're rivals. I says, screw that. I said, we're going to come on and we're going to talk about a UFO base in Malibu, whether you like it or not. We need to open up these discussions. And he was all for it. And it was really nice because I was able to work with somebody that I had heard before that I really enjoyed and that I really thought was, you know, quite the broadcaster. And so it's always nice, you know, when you can find people who, you know, are willing to, if they discover the information, they're willing to share it with other people. I don't believe in taking credit for other people's information, although there have been times where, like, for example, there's been information that's been given, and either, A, I can't get a hold of them, but I really want to get the information out there, and they get a hold of me, and then finally I get them out there. It's just a matter of, you know, landing the information and finding who's responsible for the information and getting interviews with them. And sometimes it's hard, but then when they hear the information is being distributed on shows like mine and yours and others, they tend to kind of soften up a bit and decide they wanted to start talking about it, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, man, I totally agree. These are interesting times. It's a bit of a technological crossroads when it comes to the traditional media and the alternative media. I think we're in a bit of a transition phase.
Uh-huh.
But I did want to ask you about eSETI. I'm completely fascinated with that place. I've been wanting to go there. I've talked to James Gilliland before. Tell us about some of the things you've seen there.
Well, first thing, the ranch has a power about it that is indescribable. I remember I went up there, first time I went up there, I went up there with the idea of, you know, how is this going to work out? Is this going to be something you get up there and come up empty-handed? Well, let me tell you, you don't come up empty-handed for one thing. I actually went up there with a guy I knew that was from the Air Force because I heard that, you know, UFOs were seen there on a constant basis. And I didn't want to go up there and, you know, see a bunch of satellites and a bunch of other things up there that would just kind of, you know, ruin it for me. Mm-hmm. And brought a guy up who was with the Air Force. And he looked at me and says, my gosh, Clyde, he says, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I said, well, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? And he says, you know, he's seeing these big, you know, beam ships flying overhead. And he said, we saw something come out of the mountain, actually. We saw something open up come out of the mountain. It's Mount Adams.
Damn.
And he said, this is the most remarkable thing to see. And I said, I understand that. And for the longest time, I mean, I've been there like, I go there once a year. And every time I've gone up there, I've seen something different each time, something interesting each time. Last year when we went up there, we saw lights come out of the mountain again. And this year, we're going to bring with us the GoPro mountain climbing team. And they're going to go up there and they're going to check things out for us while we're there. So it's going to be an interesting time. We're going up there this weekend and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Very awesome, man. Yeah, I've yet to have a personal experience, and that seems to be the hot spot for it. I guess you've also been present for some exorcisms in your life, too. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you know this or not, but I was, when I was younger, and of course in my bio it says I was, did a mission for the Mormon Church, and I did. I was I was a Mormon. My family's Mormon. Of course, being from Utah, you can't avoid it. You're Mormon until proven otherwise. I got out of the church after my mission only because of the fact that I got so far into everything that I was like, okay, you know, I'm through with this. But, you know, I have witnessed exorcisms. I've been involved with exorcisms. I witnessed a voodoo ritual when I was in South America. And some of them, you know, some of these things are just bizarre. It's faith that, very powerful thing. And the idea that these things can happen by faith alone or by thinking and perceiving alone, it taught me a lot about the power of the mind. And whenever anybody asks me about the paranormal and paranormal events, and they say, well, it's all in the mind of the person. Well, of course it's all in the mind of the person, but it's also something that can be shared with everybody at the same time, which, you know, makes me wonder about collective thinking, makes me wonder about how the mind and the body exchanges information and whether the information is paranormal or not. I think there's a part of the brain that allows for what we call the paranormal, but the paranormal becomes a normal part of life.
Yeah.
And so it's not really paranormal, it's normal now. and some people fear it, and some people, if they understand it, they don't have much of a fear about it because they know that it's easily taken care of. It's not like, you know, everything's a possession. It's the worst thing that can happen to you. No, possession is something that happens to you, and it can be reversed. Everything's temporary. Unless, of course, you have some demon or some spirit that's not from this planet, which most people have not really had the experience. I've had that experience dealing with spirits that aren't from this planet, from this dimension. And they always tell me, you know, they say, well, there's only one way to get rid of these demons and these spirits, and that's to rebuke them in the name of Jesus Christ. And I say, yeah, well, Jesus works a lot. He's like the disinfectant for most. You know, if you look at ghosts and demons like a disease, you know, Jesus is the disinfectant. But
really,
there are times when Jesus as the disinfectant or as the antibiotic doesn't work. And so you have to resort to other things, and you have to talk to them on their level because they're not from this planet or not from the time period that even knew of who Jesus Christ is. I mean, it's like the world is infinite. The solar system is infinite. Dimensions are infinite. And some people believe that, you know, of course, if they want to believe that, they believe that God controls everything. Well, I think he controls everything that has to do with Earth and maybe beyond our solar system, but there are times when I think that we go to other territories where there are other governors that run the show and other presidents that run the show. And I think that to think that maybe if you move into another territory, another dimension, that there's some other being that rules over that, that could be most definitely a possibility. I mean, I'm not beyond the idea of polytheism. I'm not beyond the idea of, yeah, I don't really have a belief anymore. I mean, I was taught Mormon, but you know, when you go beyond the Mormonism and you put that behind you, you tend to say to yourself, well, now I'm in search of a belief because the belief that I had was pulled out from underneath me. I mean, I was excommunicated from the church, and I no longer am a member. So when you have that type of Christianity pulled out from underneath you, and you are saying to yourself, well, gee, you know, for the longest time I believed in a supernatural church. I believed in, you know, young boys, you know, talking with God and Jesus. I believed in angels coming down and talking with little boys, telling them that they can create a church. I mean, this is no different than, you know, Ezekiel seeing the wheel or Saul of Tarsus seeing a bright light and becoming Paul. I mean, this is the same type of stuff. I mean, when you look at history, you know, bright lights in the sky, UFOs, chariots of fire, whatever, they have been the catalyst for the changing of minds and for religious, to further religious agendas. I mean, you just look at the histories and you look at how certain types of things have prompted or otherwise created the idea that there needs to be a religion or there needs to be a change in religion. And I think they'll happen again sometime. If it not be naturally done, it could be faked, or it could be, you know, some sort of story that a group of religious clerics make up. I mean, it just seems to me that we are ripe for some sort of a deus ex machina, which is literally the God from the machine, where God comes down or aliens come down or a bright light appears or something near misses us, like a huge asteroid or a rock, and we all pray it to miss us by that much, and that would be enough to spark a new religious type of movement. And I think that we're on the verge of that. I think that with the Pope coming out and saying things like, well, you know, the environment is important and we need some communitarian government rather than the government we have now. I mean, he's basically preaching globalism and
right.
And the idea that the environment is the boogeyman that we need to conquer, and those who get in the way are immoral. I think that speaking ex cathedra like that, mixing politics with religion and science and religion as he's doing, I don't know if it's right for religion for that to be that way. And in fact, it's a big turnoff for me. Because I believe that that's how you get more control. You creep into the belief systems of people, you politicize it, or you otherwise make it scientific, and when it's done, You know, people tend to think that they're critical thinkers, but in reality, what they've done is they've taken the magic that was indistinguishable from something simple, and they've made it into their religion and their dogma, which I don't appreciate.
Amen, man. I'm right there with you. I couldn't agree more. And I try to brush off any encroaching paranoia, but this Jade Helm thing is probably the first real concern I've had in my short lifetime. I mean, these are strange times, and everything from the cryptic clog in the logo to the pattern of military drills being a cover story for engineered tragedy. We've seen that before. And one thing I've gotten from your show is this AI component, that this Jade in Jade Helm could be a reference to a computer program running the whole thing. That's pretty wild. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about that component?
Sure. The component that I was discussing was a component dealing with the idea that Jade Helm is Jade 1 and Jade 2. And what these are actually AI programs and holographic map arrangements where the DuPont company, not DuPont, I'm sorry, not DuPont, what am I talking about? The Raytheon company. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought DuPont. Oh, I know why I was saying DuPont, because I was talking with a guy today about putting Freon in his truck. no, it's Raytheon. The Raytheon company sent out a memo, and I had the memo. It was a paper that discussed the Joint Air Defense Training Simulation, and that's what JADE stands for, Joint Air Defense Training Simulation. So they've got the J, and they've got the A, and they've got the D, but the TS, I guess they couldn't put anything there, so they just called it JADE, Joint Air Defense Training Simulation, which is an experimental AI. It's kind of synthetic. They're using maps. They did this back in October 2007, and what it did was it provided anti-air warfare training, which is something that they were utilizing. And then there were two naval frigate teams were involved. There was an air surveillance combat management team involved. There was a control reporting center, and they actually were doing air training, I believe, in one of the Carolinas, either South Carolina or North Carolina, and they were monitoring. DARPA was monitoring this AI, this quantum computer technology that produced holographic battlefield simulations. And last night we were talking about Project Nimbus and also the possibility of Bluebeam, because they were actually testing the laser capabilities of aircraft being able to produce a number of images on clouds. And one of the images they produced was a man riding a horse. And so they'll have the same kind of holographic battlefield simulations, and virtual technology will be used basically during the drill. And that's the reason why they want to master the human domain, because they want to have the AI become aware and predict human responses to certain types of joint air defense types of apparatus and work. So what we're dealing with is we're dealing with the beginning of something called, Skynet.
Right,
which,
<yeah.
laughs> which, of course, is a frightening thing, because Skynet, of course, in the Terminator films, is a self-aware AI system that runs all war machines. And, that's the biggest concern I have, the idea of having a self-aware artificial intelligence system that programs itself to declare war on humanity by programming these machines. And they already have what they call self-aware machines. I mean, one of them is this drone that it's able to be programmed and then on its own able to go out, find target, and then destroy target it's like set it and forget it. It's like everything's by remote control anymore. And what we have is, we have everything going on algorithm. Basically, is that the computer detects some sort of a malicious algorithm, and then, of course, that would indicate to whoever's monitoring the situation, said, well, here's a possible malicious threat. Not really a threat, but a possible malicious threat, which would generate, attention. And then, of course, we get metadata, and we get all this other stuff that are, they go into social networks and they say, well, this person who is a supposed threat said this about America, said this about this, and has been known to visit, let's say, sites like yours, mine, others, and they're considering us to be these, what you call, belligerents, these, these guys that speak out against the government. We're sedition.
Right.
We're seditionists. So that self-aware system basically dispatches artificial intelligent drones that are auto-sufficient and capable of just coming in and secretly targeting your home where you're broadcasting and basically putting a couple bullets in you and then flies away. So that's what's scary about this type of material. That's what's scary about Jade Helm is that we're looking at joint air defense training simulations where they do this. They say, okay, computer, tell us where these bad guys are. And the computer will go through house to house, scanning computers, scanning cell phones, scanning all this stuff with this AI. And then the AI reports back to a commander or, get a load of this, not a commander, but reports back to a computer. And then the computer then commands other computers that are auto-sufficient and that are capable of attacking to attack or make plans to attack. And it tells the soldiers, okay, soldiers, computer tells you to jump, and they jump. And that's what's scary.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're entering the age of Ultron. This is like Minority Report with pre-crime.
Yep.
The whole idea that this algorithm is going to be the end-all, be-all, and it's going to just solve problems before they occur. I mean, that's scary territory. I don't know if the public is willing to accept that at this point, but, I mean, they might not have much of a choice.
Well, what people don't realize is every time they send a Twitter or a tweet, every time they're on the phone, every time they're sending out an email, and every time they're on Facebook, it sends out an algorithm. And these sites are measuring algorithms, and they can pretty much figure out the overall feeling of the country by reading the emails and reading Twitters and reading Facebooks. Now, not one person is sitting there reading all these Facebooks and making a report. No, they have a computer analyzing certain words and phrases that are being used, and the computer determines what is the overall attitude of the country right now. Okay, they can have different ones. They can have things like, docile, angry, very angry. You know, they can run it on all kinds of typical topics. What's trending? What isn't trending? I mean, that's how they knew that people were looking at UFO pictures. That's how they knew that people looked at sex, or that's how they knew that people are using porn, or that's how they knew also that people are watching more TV online than they're watching on cable right now.
Yeah,
and these are the things that they found that they can take what pretty much is the zeitgeist of the country, the zeitgeist of the world, and they can analyze it, and it's not so much a geist anymore. It's not a ghost anymore or a spirit. It's a living, breathing apparatus that can be determined or predicted to move in certain directions by certain stimulus and modifications and manipulations. So they can find out if advertising certain things are working on the public or if certain news stories are working on the public. Have you ever noticed that everything that's happening now is done to aggravate the American people?
Right.
Anything from, first it's racism, then it's taking down the Confederate flag, replacing it with the rainbow flag, and people thinking that homosexual marriage is horrible, so they're getting angry about that. And then today, the whole situation with Iran. We've allowed Iran now to, go hog wild on their nuclear, and it's just, it's pissing off Israel, it's pissing off, everybody's getting angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is they're basically testing the waters to see how angry are people going to get before there's a break in the algorithm. When the algorithm busts or breaks, we're going to have civil or worldwide upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
And that could mean war declared. That could mean, certain types of words being thrown around in UN meetings. It could mean assassinations. It could be coups, coup d'etats, all these things that they can now pretty much predict using these metadata algorithms and having AI or what appears to be a lower form of AI determine how we feel. So anymore, what you're doing is pretty much what they've directed, not what you're really doing. You think you're making choices, but in reality, they're coercing you into making choices that they can approximate. And that's why, have you ever noticed your TV shows relate more to you, your movies relate more to you, and then you're thinking to yourself, wow, why is this so real? Why is this movie happening, and it's happening now in reality? It's all because of the fact that they have metadata that can pretty much figure out how you feel and what you're seeing and what certain types of shows and movies and TV shows and songs are really, people liking. That's really bizarre.
Yeah, man. I mean, I usually consider the internet a tool of freedom. I mean, it's definitely freed me from the chains of economic slavery. But I mean, the truth of the matter is maybe that was just an illusion so that they could get us to fully pour our hearts out into the open, gather the data and use it against us just a few short years later.
Well, they are using data against us, and that's why you know, if you get the right type of people who analyze how people move. For example, I take Taylor Swift into the picture here, and I know this is kind of bizarre. But you notice that Taylor Swift has been, it's been said that her album is multi-platinum now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying to myself, well, okay, she's only been around for a little while. She had a country career. Why all of a sudden is she multi-platinum? I think she got smart, got out of the country music scene, and decided she was going to go pop because that's what the trends told her. And then she did songs that she knew would touch the right amount of people. And, of course, now her album's like triple platinum, and no one knows why. All of a sudden she's gone triple platinum. She's talented, but, I mean, I don't know if she's triple platinum material. You know, and gone are the days of marketing rock and roll and music like it used to be marketed. Now, you know, it's all done by algorithms and Twitters and social media and all this stuff. And so if you get the right kind of consultants to have their pulse, have their finger on the pulse of America, man, you can figure out what makes people tick, what they want to see, what they want to hear. And immediately, you know, it becomes just every day. See, the reason why we're seeing certain things and the reason why we're listening to certain things and watching certain things is because the people are saying it without saying it. They're basically writing about things on their internet pages. They're Twittering it, and they're talking about it, and it's being mined as we speak.
Yeah, they're constantly tightening the screws, constantly refining the control mechanisms. These are troubled times, and it is kind of scary stuff. But to be fair, there's always some researchers in the conspiracy world warning of impending doom. But another reason I'm on high alert is not only because of Jade Helm, but this window of September, October 2015 is being talked about for several other reasons, too. I mean, economists are talking about a global market collapse around that time. Anthony Patch warned about CERN's next big startup at that time. He's already been silenced. You recently did a show about a potential asteroid impact in that window. So we got a lot of major threads pointing to this being a
The asteroid impact is based primarily on vision and prophecy. It has nothing to do with reality. I mean, this guy could be right. It could be wrong. I mean, it just depends on what you believe.
Fair.
Anthony Patch did some really remarkable research on CERN. I mean, I know Anthony personally.
Yeah.
The man is a genius, and a lot of people don't realize that he has a lot of security clearances that he doesn't talk about or boast about, but he certainly has a lot of security clearances. He knows what he's talking about. He doesn't boast his credentials. He just says, listen to me. And then, of course, I was at the gathering. It was a Ground Zero University gathering where he spoke and was approached by the Men in Black, which, by the way, those two men approached me. They shook my hand. I was in the hospital. 2 hours later, they didn't know what was wrong with me. So I'm a little frightened by that because I think that what they did is they exchanged something in my hand. They either poisoned me or made me sick. I had to get a blood transfusion because it was so bad.
Jesus.
But it was just it was an ugly night altogether. He was told not to speak. And then I had another ghost hunt. I did a ghost hunting seminar with Ground Zero University. I was approached by another guy who came up to me and he said, what are your initials? And of course, my real name's Lewis. I mean, everybody knows that. I go by Clyde because it's my father's name. So I'm Clyde Lewis. I said, well, my initials are LCH. And he goes, no, they're LHC. Get it? And I'm going, oh, my God, Large Hadron Collider. And that upset me because I was worried because, of course, you know, Anthony got visited by the same people. And so they wanted to push me, the LHC, the LCH thing. So they were basically dinking around with my initials. And I was just like thinking, gosh, these guys will go to no end to make you feel intimidated and frightened. And, you know, they succeeded. I mean, I was upset because when the guy left, I had tears in my eyes thinking, what are they going to do to me? You know, they've already put me in the hospital. And I'm already, you know, pretty fragile with my health at the moment. You know, even though I sound like I'm strong, I'm getting stronger, you know, every day.
Yeah.
But I mean, after three bouts of cancer and, you know, being in the hospital and dealing with it and, you know, putting it into remission and fighting like hell to stay alive, I can't have somebody coming up to me and basically upsetting me into thinking that I'm ready to go again. Because, you know, I just hate going through, you know, you go to death's door like two or three times, you get kind of tired of it. You want to live a good life. And, that's what I'm trying to do now.
Right.
But, you know, you have somebody come to you and say, well, I have something to tell you, and if you don't move, you're going to die. And you're like, no, come on. You know, I've faced death's door before. You can't threaten me, and if you're going to kill me, you better do it right in front of everybody. I don't know. It was really intimidating. I don't know what was said to Anthony, but, yeah. I mean, and then, of course, there was the rumor that they killed him, which they didn't do.
Right.
There was a Before It's News piece that said of the MIBs killed Anthony Patch, and I had to call him and find out because he's a good friend, and I didn't want to you know something I don't. I mean, I should know more than him or more than them, whoever they are. And so I cleared that up quickly because I didn't want anybody to think that he was dead. But I mean, this type of stuff now, I don't necessarily think that it's always the government. I know when people say, I was approached by the government. No, you're not being approached by the government. What you're being approached by is a bunch of opportunists that have the power to shut you down. And it's either business people or people from the organization you're talking about threatening you. I mean, they hire their thugs, too, in the private sector. It's not just the government, and it's not just the men in black. It's something else. And I don't think, and that's the problem, is you never hear that from, you know, talk show hosts who talk about the subject matter because they want to make it sound so cloak and dagger. But, you know, the Cold War's over, and, you know, the men in black showing up are, you know, are so Cold War. Now it's not just the men in black that will show up. It's the police that show up, the FBI shows up, the CIA or NSA show up, or somebody else. And, of course, you have a group of individuals that are in the private sector that will show up and try to shut you off and shut you down. I know that I went on an investigation one time, and I was at Dugway, which was out in the middle of the West Desert, and trying to find out if it was the new Area 51. And it was hilarious because I went up to the gate, and I was doing this investigation, talking on a camera with a microphone, and somebody saw me when they drove to the gate, and I figured, oh, I'm screwed now. And all of a sudden, this Humvee pulls up with a group of soldiers in it. They all have these huge guns, and one of the soldiers recognized me. He said, Clyde Lewis, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm doing a report. He said, well, gosh, he says, we know you're harmless, but, and we won't stop you, but, you know, there's the security people here, and they're not going to be kind to you. And I'm thinking, who are the security people? Turned out to be Wackenhut. And sure enough, after the soldiers left me, that were there on patrol, you know, they were the military police, the private police came in, and they pulled a gun on me, held it to me and said, get off the property and we'll escort you. And they actually escorted me and my crew off the property out of Tooele County and right back to Salt Lake County again. And it was just, my God, you know, and that was a good, you know, 40, 50 mile drive. And they were there behind us to make sure that we were never going to cross into their county again.
Damn.
And, you know, that had nothing to do with the military. It had nothing to do with men in black. It had everything to do with a security firm, private security firm, that was hired to protect the secrets of Dugway. And that's why I was escorted out. It had nothing to do with anything government. It had everything to do with the private organization.
Yeah, man. Private security, private police, private prisons, private military. That's the way to go. They're not as accountable as the military would be, or government workers would be.
No, they didn't see, and that's what they did in South America when they had the dirty war. They hired private death squads to go out and do the work that military wouldn't do. I mean, military, in their right minds, would not fire on American citizenry, nor would they round American citizens up without feeling a little guilty. Well, what you do to avoid that situation is you hire people who are psychotic enough and sick enough to basically do these type of things under orders. And so they'll hire their own death squads and their private mercenaries to do the dirty work for them, and that's how it's done. And that way the government's not held accountable for some rogue group that the government can have some plausible deniability over. And they can be hired by the private sector, and no one can be the wiser. I mean, people can do this all the time. I mean, just individuals who feel that, you know, you're trampling on something. I mean, I've gotten that before, too, where people walked up to me and say, are you something government? No. Who are you? Well, I'm just someone that's concerned for your welfare. Well, don't be concerned for my welfare, and don't come around me, and don't threaten me, because, my gosh, I take threats very seriously, and I don't like people who are that way.
Yeah, another thing I've heard about your past, flirting with disaster, is you've had a car blown up one time in the past?
Yeah. It was 1995, 96. That's when I started Ground Zero. But see, back then I was kind of what you'd call a renegade. You know, I didn't have any responsibility. I didn't have any respect. I didn't have any, I went in thinking, you know, I'm some smart-ass kid saying, you're not going to tell me what to say. You're not going to tell me what to do. And then when some guy brought me a picture of what looked like an alien out in the middle of the West Desert, I posted it up on a wall on a website, and I didn't care. I just said, hey, this is very important that I think that it should be getting out there, and no one can tell me that my freedom of speech will be violated. But it was when they actually came by. They actually came by and told me to take it down. I told them no. They blew up my car. But they didn't do it to kill me. They did it to scare me, and they succeeded because I didn't know what to do after that, actually. I just thought, well, I actually did a show about why your snot was green and why your poop was brown. It was serious. I did a show about that the day afterwards because I didn't know what to do. I did a show on Grossology because I figured, you know, that would be something funny and something that would be like a big FU to whoever it is that's coming after me. And turns out that the military showed up, but they showed up, they weren't dressed in their clothes. They dressed up as civilians, and they came out to tell me why they think that I was targeted. And it's because of some secrets they gave me about the picture and what they thought it was and how I shouldn't have put it up there because I pissed off the wrong people. And I said, was it a military person they pissed off? No, they said it was somebody that may have been a manufacturer or someone who had interest in the idea that it was a secret material that I needed not post, and so that's what happened.
Man. Wild ride you've been on, that's for sure. So I there's a couple of subjects I wanted to talk to you about in the wider conspiracy net, I guess, like time and cycles. I mean, we know that equinoxes and solstices seem to be markers for the elite's plans. They seem to take stock in astrology. Meanwhile, they push to us that it's a bunch of silliness. The manipulation of time and the changes that have been made to the calendar over the years, leap years, daylight savings time, starting the week on Sunday instead of Saturday, these kind of things, they're kind of a more recent fascination for me. The idea that this screws up our natural rhythms and makes us more controllable, it's something you've talked about a lot. How deep does this go in your eyes?
I believe that they're eventually going to go to the 13-month calendar, and that is something they've been wanting to push for some time. I don't know how long. I thought they were going to do it after 2012, actually. I was thinking that, you know, that December 21st, 2012 would be like the end of a time, end of an era.
Yeah.
And then what they were doing is they were force structuring a new time, a new era. And the reason why I was thinking about this is because, of course, you know, Greenwich is zero time, you know, 000. And they were the ones that are basically the timekeepers. Well, Islam stood up and said, we're building a big clock, you know, over Mecca, and we want you to know that we are the golden mean and that we are the center of the universe and we should be dictating time. And of course, they wanted to dictate time back to the moon calendar, which was 13 months. And then they added an extra zodiac sign, which was the old zodiac sign of Ophiuchus. And that didn't catch on very well, but still, it was the idea of 13 houses rather than 12 houses.
Right.
All of these things are basically to prepare us for the possibility of a 13-month calendar where, you know, it would be equal 28 days each calendar. But that hasn't happened yet. And the idea of also a new hour way we'd work. So it would be a different work week, maybe like 3-day work week, 4-day work week, and possibly more hours in the workplace. And then, of course, the idea of a 13-month calendar. And they were saying that that would be better for us than the 12-month calendar we have now.
Hmm.
And it would keep us more equal and more balanced and everything else. We'd have more. They said actually we'd have more time. But the thing is doing it the way they do it now, they take away time. That's why we have leap year, is because of that very reason. We don't need leap year if we just evened out the calendars and make it a 13-month calendar rather than a 12-month calendar. I don't know if they're going to do this anytime soon, but I have a feeling there will be a reason to do it in the near future, whether it be, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, who knows. But I just think they are slowly, slowly working their way to changing the way we look at time and to put it back the way it used to be.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with that thread. And another element of this you've talked and written about quite some time ago that stuck with me for probably 2 years it's been, but the phantom time hypothesis. I think this is so interesting. Can you tell the people a little bit about what that entails?
Okay. It's a little complicated, but I'll give it a shot. The phantom time hypothesis. There was a, I don't even know if it's a theory, I think it's something that was presented in Germany, if I recall, that there was a possibility that early timekeepers and historians had literally faked the histories. Actually, it's just suggested the Middle Ages, 614, around 614, 911 AD, never happened.
Right.
That nothing happened during that time, that recorded history was faked. And it's something that's not talked about because it's just... the idea, though, that, you know, that time period, 614 to 911, never happened. And then it was added to the calendar later. There was a misinterpretation of documents. There was false, either that or the church at the time or the people who kept, you know, the records,
right,
were doing deliberate falsification. And, of course, the calendar was something that was very valuable. So there were conspirators who wanted to basically screw with history. So what it would mean, if that was to be the, you know, the truth, is that all the artifacts and all the three centuries that are there belong to other periods. And so what we got is we got a time where a time of no time. And this has happened many times in history where there's really nothing to be said about certain time or certain epochs. And so the guy, I think, Herbert Illig was the guy who came up with the idea, and what he did is he determined that historians have admitted that there have been many documents from the Middle Ages that don't necessarily measure up to scrutiny, and that these falsified accounts in history seem to be found more and more, and that this has been going on for some time. I think they first discovered and first brought this forward in 1986, and that it was indicated that many of the documents produced by the Roman Catholic Church during the Middle Ages were created hundreds of years before, and then basically they just left a couple centuries open with no talk. They just added these things later. So what we have here is we have this medieval society that was lost, and that many of the things we make up about medieval society are all pretty much fantasy. And so, you know, everything that has happened between 614 and 911 AD were skillfully forged, and that all these things were basically anticipated in the future, and then they never really happened. So there's discrepancy in basically calculating the dates and figuring out. So you need to ask yourself, you know, put yourself in today's contemporary history and notice that, as you said, you know, we've been seeing a lot of things happening with regards to, you know, what the future is supposed to be rather than what it is. You've heard, you know, people say, well, we're all going to die 10 years because of global heating or global warming or whatever. It never happens. So they go back and they redo the facts and the ideas about temperature and ideas about the industrial age and how its impact. Of course, there's Osama bin Laden's death, where they said he died May 1st, 2011. But many people know that between the 9/11 attacks and the time of the announcement of his death, we somehow had his death. There was a news report, and you look this up. CBS News reported January 20, 2002, Osama bin Laden was hospitalized for dialysis treatment in the Pakistani military hospital, and that was on September 10, 2001, and that was the day before 9/11. There was reported that bin Laden had a terminal lung problem and kidney disease, and then, of course, he died before Christmas of 2001. However, we know that he died on May 1st, 2011. So it's not beyond the pale for authorities to lie about history or to lie about time frames and time, and there are time discrepancies. So to have these times, like that, from, you know, the 600s to the 900s being falsified and being done so for three centuries, is not out of the ordinary when communications were that small. So the authorities can lie about the time, put that in the history, and no one would know the difference. Same with what's happening here. I mean, officially, we'll think that Osama bin Laden died May 1st, 2011, but the world would know that he died sometime before Christmas of 2001.
Those are really the threads and theories that I love the most, the ones that rip the lid right off what I think I know and really challenge me to see how open is my mind, how much really could have been manipulated, how many bold moves on the conspiratorial chessboard could they have made, and rewriting a 300-year chunk of history, or just writing it, not even rewriting it, because I guess it might not have happened at all. But that is really bold, and the level of control that someone would have over basically all of humanity to institute such a thing. I mean, those things really, really challenge me. And I mean, let's talk about the Vatican a little bit, because they obviously have had a huge seat at this table. They're a power center that's been behind a lot of manipulations in the past. Now they've called for mass exorcisms in Mexico and in the U.S. And I guess, when it comes to dissecting the Vatican's role and the depths of their secrets, what's interested you the most? What have you found out?
Well, the idea of their idea of controlling and connecting with what is known as the Roman superstate, which of course they want to reestablish. But the Roman superstate will not be officiated by the Pope; it would be officiated by a number of other people who would claim to have divine right. So, what you're seeing here is you're seeing the Pope now becoming a spokesperson for both politically and scientifically charged dogmas that have been mixed in with the other dogmas. He's making it sound ex cathedra, which of course may or may not be true. This would in turn create a schism in the church, and then there would be division. But of course, there would have to be something that would reunite and put together all of the churches and all of the philosophies that tend to move towards the idea of a pantheon based in earth and nature and all of these things that people claim to be pagan. And this will happen, you know, over time, but it's still up for grabs as to who was going to be the anointed one to handle the charge of running the Roman superstate. My finger is pointed at Prince William of Wales, that he would be the one to be chosen to do this. And the reason why is because we would see both the orthodoxy and the rest of the church coming together. They need a business, or at least what they call a focal point over who actually rules the world. And we know that the world is being run by a few bankers. Most of these bankers have been called the Jewish bankers that basically fuel the funds for England, Rome, the terrorist organizations, all these people declare war and create war. But one of the things that's interesting about the royal families are the royal families consist of human beings who believe that they are divine and have divine bloodlines, tracing all the way back to what is known as the Anglo, they're called the Anglo Jews the Anglo Jerusalem, the idea that England also has divine blood, that the English monarchies have divine blood, that it can be traced to King David, and in some cases traced to Christ, even though that's false. They've had genealogies being falsified, but what is happening is we constantly are hearing that, you know, this divine kings and these divine queens and all these are pretty much working their way into rediscovering their powers. We killed off the monarchies in World War I and World War II, but now we want monarchies back. We want empires back. We somehow are drawing ourselves back to the idea of imperial cult or imperial cult. And this is the idea that you know, many people don't realize, that we want to be ruled by a leader that both has God in mind and science in mind, and everybody's happy. And the only way to do that is to put in a humanist, urban agnostic or urban atheist type leader who somehow believes that he is divine by blood right, which of course the royals believe they are. And you have people like, you know, Prince William being married on the Cosmati pavement, which is a sacred sidewalk, I guess you could call it, where only the king of the world is allowed to be married there. And so that makes, you know, that makes William the king of the world, or Rex Mundi, which if you go and you look what Rex Mundi has always been considered a type of antichrist, because what he does is he literally lies about his lineage towards royalty and divinity and to God, and then in reality he's just a counterfeit. And I think this is what I mean by the synagogue of Satan, or I think this is what I mean is by the synagogue of Satan. They're, you know, are those who put themselves in positions of power, call themselves the direct bloodlines to the, you know, the old Israeli kings and Hebrew kings and that sort of thing, when in reality their blood is no different than yours and mine. And the whole idea that they produce the idea that Jesus Christ never died on the cross, that he actually survived it, and then he moved to France, and that he had children in Europe. I mean, it kind of destroys the idea of what the church is about, and that is about resurrection and about death and about raising from the grave. And if that didn't happen, then this basically is a blasphemy towards the very foundation of what the Christian church is about. And this is what will be revealed eventually, is that those who are in power that have been all this time pretending to be part of some great and wondrous church are going to basically take it down and say that it never happened.
Yeah. The Vatican is definitely involved in a lot of weird stuff. I mean, one piece of the puzzle that some researchers have brought up, but they never go into too much detail about it. I've tried to read some links. I'm wondering if you've heard much about it, but some researchers talk about their observatory and their fascination with the Orion Nebula. Have you heard anything about that? Do you have any idea what that might be about?
Lucifer in Arizona, that's their observatory that they're using, and they're out there to look into wormwood for one, and the other is extraterrestrials. They're fascinated by the idea of extraterrestrials arriving on this planet and literally, you know, converting them to Christianity, I guess. But you know, that's one of the reasons. The other reason, of course, like you said, they're very concerned about the Orion area. I think that's because, you know, it's been rumored that that's where the gods come from, is that area of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. You know, there are two areas, actually. There's Orion's Belt, and then from there you can move into the House of Ophiuchus, which is usually the other place where they say the gods have come from. They're the healing gods. That's why it's the snake handler. And the snake was always represented as a healing type of creature. I mean, that's why, you know, in the Bible you read of the fiery serpents and how Moses raised a snake onto a pole. And if you looked at the snake hanging on the pole, that would give you, you know, relief from whatever's going on. And, of course, Christ eventually was the snake on the pole as well. And if you look at a dollar sign, it's a snake on a pole, and it's all there to relieve your pain, pretty much.
Man, and what fascinates me in the modern world and looking at the history of banking, of course, you know, now economic slavery is the name of the game, and we don't see the linkage quite as clear anymore as we used to, but when this alchemical transmutation of debt into currency was first being perfected, this spell was spawned by these ancient banker priesthoods, and there was such a connection between the two, and I wonder if the original idea even came from them sometimes, because they seem to be in contact with something.
Well, they're back to the Knights Templar. They were the first to have loans. They were the first to have checks. They were the first to have the gold, and they were the ones that were exchanging the money.
Right.
I mean, you go all the way back to the money changers at the temple, but I mean, I don't know if we could name them one by one, but we certainly can look at the Knights Templar as a more, I guess you could call it a more recent type of historical figure that was handling the banking and doing what they were doing. And in fact, when they took all the Templar money and they stole all the money from the church, I mean, that was a pretty big deal. So, of course, that's why most of them were killed, and they were, you know, the church got a hold of them, basically killed them and accused them of Satan worship. So, I mean, you go all the way back to the Knights Templar, you'll find they were one of the first to establish the modern banking system.
Right. Man, how likely do you think it is that there could be something non-human at the top of the power pyramid?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing that's always been, it's called a synarchy. It's synarchy, that we're being run by some powerful entity that's not human, or a powerful entity that's more godlike or more extraterrestrial or even dimensional. I was told once by a guy who purported to be a man in black, an MIB, called himself Mr. N, that he said that Americans, the world actually, doesn't realize that there is no head, that everybody works for themselves, and there are groups of men that put themselves above other men. So there's so many tiers to the pyramid, but everything all goes to one particular head. Apparently it doesn't, because there are a few people that basically act without even a sense of morality. So they're the ones that seem to be the very threatening ones that hold the power, the ones with no morality. And that's why we love our psychopaths, is because anybody's psychopathic enough to run a group of individuals into the ground, or to command armies to have them go kill at a command, or do things like this, or witness the pain and suffering of a group of individuals that you're supposed to be presiding over and just ignoring them. That takes one hell of a psychotic mind, or a psychopathic mind, to do that. And so just the idea that there are men in power that are vampires. And the metaphor of the vampire steps in here and says, you know, the vampires are running the show. The vampires are running the theater. And they're picking and choosing those they eat on a regular basis. And that's the thing, is you want to hope that you're not in the crosshairs of one of these vampires that want to take your soul, your blood, and everything else that goes with it. And it seems that more and more people give in to that victimization, rather than to fight back and know that they do have more personal power against this type of authority than they realize.
Yeah. And we're lucky that we can find each other now on the internet. We did talk about that a little bit, the positives and negatives. I mean, it could be data mining for the Jade Helm operation. And again, I've always thought of it as a positive thing. But something you said recently that really resonated with me about the internet is that you suggested that it might work as a pressure release valve, that as long as someone has a social media platform to rant on, then they'll just get it all out there and go back to their shitty job in the morning and be a good little worker, be like they're a program to be. And I think there might be a lot of truth to that.
Oh, yeah. People feel they're doing their time or doing their bit by getting the word out. It may not be the the correct one, but they feel like they're doing it, and people believe they're awake if they're just posting stuff on the internet. Now, being awake is a day-to-day thing. Being awake is it's not just, you know, putting things on the internet and getting people to pay attention and say, I'm awake. No, it's the idea of being fully aware of your fellow man, fully aware that everything that these guys are doing in power, they're to fool us and to divide us. And the more you are divided, the more you play into the Engel and Marx's vision of the future, where everything that the puppeteers want you to do, you do, and it just opens the dialogue for more of ideas of state socialism and rights being taken away and everything else that it entails. I mean, communism hasn't been successful for a reason, but everybody's certainly trying to do their best to make it work, and that's the problem, is that, you know, people don't realize that there is a plan, and that plan has been tried many times because it sounds so perfect, but it doesn't happen, and it always ends up being a mess, always ends up being a problem.
I sometimes wonder, or I worry, I guess, since I've been thinking about this, that maybe there's an element to what we do that plays into the same trap. Do you ever consider that?
Well, I mean, we contribute to it, too. I mean, any piece of bad information that we report, it echoes through the internet and goes through time.
Right.
You know, once again, it goes back to what I was saying last night. Whatever, it can be fake, it could be real, but whatever your brain registers is real remains real until otherwise, and still it stays real in your mind. Your conscious self knows that it's not real, but your unconscious self doesn't know.
Yeah.
Once it's filed away, it's filed as a possibility. It's filed as a yes rather than a no. So whatever you expose yourself to, entertainment-wise, music-wise, whatever you look on the internet, that stuff is there to be placed into your back programming, so you have it there, whether it's profane or reverent or whatever, it's all there. Same with the internet. The internet has plenty of fake stuff on it, plenty of real stuff on it, plenty of misguided stuff on it, but doesn't matter. It still remains there as something to use as a source.
Yeah. And that goes back to what we're talking about, how we present interesting perspectives, not necessarily the gospel truth, and people get upset that sometimes the perspectives might contradict.
Right.
It is kind of difficult, and I've had some little run-ins with misinformation or things that were said on the air, or things that were presented that I wish I could have taken back right after, and I'm sure...
The best thing you can do is apologize and move on. If they don't like it, there's Radio Disney to listen to. That's what I tell people. It's just, if you don't like me, two frequencies down, you can listen to the Mickey Mouse station, and that's okay.
Right.
Because the Mickey Mouse station gets old really fast. They'll be coming back to me sometime soon. So I don't feel badly about telling people that the Mickey Mouse Disney station is just a couple doors down. They can listen to it, or they can listen to country music until their head explodes. But I'm here to deliver honest information. If I screw up, I will correct that information. If I know that what I'm giving you is something interesting and something to take home and something to think about, I've done my job. My job isn't here. I used to say, you know, like everybody else, we're bringing the truth. I'm not bringing the truth anymore. I'm bringing something honest. The truth is only within you. It's not out there. It's in you. So if the truth can be found within you, you're taking the time to find the truth. I'm not here to give you a truth. I'm not here to give you your truth. You have your own truth. And we need to magnify that truth and spread that truth with everybody you come in contact with. I do what I do because that's how I feel. I'm spreading what I feel is honesty and truth. And I do it out of love, and I do it out of fun, and I do it out of the fact that I find it fascinating, and I hope you do too. That's the point.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to be told what to think, or they want to continue to push their hate, or they want to hear that everything's falling apart, then they certainly have something wrong with them, and that's what I look at. I mean, sure, I can report that everything's falling apart and there's nothing we can do about it, but sometimes I just want to take a break and I want to report about things that I find fascinating, and that's what I do.
Yeah. Agreed, man. Well said. Well, Clyde, this has been awesome. A bit of a milestone for me, man. It's been a privilege to talk to you and a ton of fun. It's about time we call it in. Of course, remind the people where and when they can catch Ground Zero, but also let them know if you got any other events or field investigations out there that they should know about.
We're going to East City on the 17th. We're going to be there for 3 days. Actually, I'm leaving Sunday morning. Maybe go to a Bigfoot convention, who knows, or an air show. But in the meantime, we're doing that investigation. We're always doing Ground Zero University. And in October, I'll be in Conspiracy Zone, which I'll be speaking with people like Jordan Maxwell and others. I'm looking forward to that. I'll be in Hollywood, California. Details will come as soon as we get closer to it. That'll be in October. And plus, of course, many Halloween scares coming up and all kinds of things moving towards the paranormal. But, of course, we have a little bit of parapolitical to get to as Jane Helm begins its tenure, I guess, or its tour of the United States tomorrow. And so all kinds of interesting stuff in the works around. So tonight we're going to be talking about the report from Iron Mountain, which is going to be fascinating because I want to show people this all been in the planning stages since the 60s, and it'll really blow some minds. So I'm hoping to do that. That's what I like doing, blowing minds, teaching people, and getting them acquainted with things they didn't normally talk about. So there we go.
Amen. Clyde Lewis, blowing more minds than the U.S. military. I love it.
Okay, great.
Very awesome. Well, thanks again, man. Watch your health and take care of yourself out there.
I'll do that. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care.
Good night. Take care.
There we have it, party people. Another THC in the bag. Two more to go in the month of July, and then I'm scrambling to get a few shows scheduled to go out while I'm in Armenia. It is tough being a one-man show sometimes, but I think I make it work. It does get a little harder all the time, though. I was very surprised to have this show sort of stumble into existence, but I've always considered Clyde one of my favorite hosts still on the terrestrial airwaves, and some might consider that being a little bit like the world's tallest midget because it's slim pickings on the AM/FM, if you ask me. It is great that Clyde was able to leave the Mormon church and forge his own path. It couldn't have been easy, and obviously he still incorporates some of Christianity into his worldview a lot more than me, but sometimes you just have to use your own discernment when listening to a host or a show you like. I'm sure you guys know about that. You do it every day. You probably have to write off half of my craziness, but he is a staple in my conspiracy journal, and I thought it was a fun time. I wish he could have been on his studio mics, but the station runs other shows during that time, so we had to go with the phone. Either way, in the second hour, we talked about some other far-out things, the flat earth theory resurgence, how many people are talking about that, all the researchers out there making that their thing. We also talked about the hollow earth theory, strangeness in space, Mars and Saturn, jumping timelines, and a few other aspects of the weird reality we live in. I think this AI angle to Jade Helm is super interesting, especially if you put any stock in predictive programming and preludes to the plan being in Hollywood movies and mainstream TV, because it's kind of the thing that's been the theme of most of this year's summer blockbusters. I don't know. But speaking of blockbusters and things that are over, that's it for me this week. Your move, Ultron, Skynet, and the other machines of the computer-controlled police state. Your frickin' move.
All the prayer in their hearts, all along thought they were rooting for the home team, as they're sent to the game and torn apart. We twist this tourniquet upon the pipeline that he carries all the pain in the world, as we blindly clap and cheer from the sidelines. It's clear on a losing streak from the very start, and that's where they found me. That's where they